Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Science of Sports Recovery podcast. On today, we have a guest that soon after he earned his Doctor of Physical Therapy, Dr. Polka became disappointed in his profession. Rather than researching for greatness and pushing to the envelope, he felt that physical therapy industry had become stagnant and complacent. This brought him to the crossroads that eventually led to the patented 180 system. After several years of experimentation, further education, and applying real science in the clinic, Dr. Polka came up with a system that was designed to get results. It certainly stands out among conventional PT. This evolution is what allowed him to open the 180 Physical Therapy, and since 2005, 180 PT has grown into multiple clinic model. Now the patented 180 system is being taught to licensed medical professionals across the country. I'm excited to break down this physiology behind the common muscle recovery tools, as well as what is stretching, should you do it, shouldn't you do it, and many more tips that you will want to hear.
You're listening to the Science of Sports Recovery podcast. Each week, we explore how to recover more efficiently from training so you can work out harder and realize your full potential. This is the Science of Sports Recovery podcast.
Hey, Rhett, it's great to have you on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Awesome. So we got an intro on you, but I always like to start with knowing the athlete behind the professional. Every professional that goes into kind of the athletic world tends to have some sort of athletic background. So I'm curious to know, what sport was your first, like very first, maybe it was 4 or 5 years old, and how did you get into that sport?
Yeah, so my first sport was football. I just remember getting like a football helmet and shoulder pads when I was probably in kindergarten and going out and playing in the backyard. And luckily I had next door neighbors, they had four boys. So everybody had their own equipment. So we would just go play tackle football in the backyard.
Yeah.
And then that progressed into, you know, little league, high school, college,
sure,
all that kind of stuff. So of all the sports that I played, football was the first one that I played, and it was the last one that I played.
Okay. Did you do any like supplemental stuff, or was it pretty much football your whole life?
No, I was, so in junior high, I was football, wrestling, track, and basketball.
Okay.
High school was football, basketball, track, and then college was football.
Okay. And did you choose football in college because that was what you were best at or what you liked the most?
Probably both. I mean, I enjoyed playing other sports when I was younger, mm-hmm. like middle school, junior high, high school, but always in the back of my mind that was always kind of something to do while I was waiting for the next football season.
For sure. Were your like parents, kind of leaning towards football? Like it, was there a family culture around football, or was that just what you tended to be into?
No, my dad was a standout football player in high school, okay. Played in college. So I was never really pushed to football. I just remember ever since I was a little kid, just watching it and always having a football in my hand. And anytime I could get somebody to go play in the backyard, that's what we did.
Yeah. Cool. Who was like your star that you looked up to, through high school?
You know, the funny thing is I just had a conversation about this with my wife the other day.
Really?
I don't wear, I'm a big Steelers fan, but okay. I don't wear Steelers clothes. I don't wear anybody's jersey.
Yeah.
So I was a huge Steelers fan. That's okay. who I followed growing up, but I didn't have like one particular player that I just, you know, had to watch.
Sure. Cool. Well, Steelers are doing pretty good this year. So,
that's a little bit of a rough subject in our house.
Yeah, it was kind of a crash and burn at the end of the year here. Yeah. Cool. So your college career, how'd that go? Did you ever think about like going further than college, or how was that?
No, I think reality set in when I was probably a junior, maybe a sophomore in high school that, you know, I was, if I could play college football, that'd be great. That'd probably be it.
Sure.
So like NFL aspirations were not in the picture once I got to like junior high.
Okay. And when did you get interested in physical therapy then?
So I actually got my first injury, nothing major, pulled a muscle when I was in ninth grade. And that's when I went to physical therapy for the first time. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I had already started. I would go into school starting in seventh grade about an hour before school and lift weights and train to get bigger, faster, stronger.
Yeah.
So then when I had that injury and went in to see PT and they had, you know, the anatomical charts and all this equipment, and I was like,
yeah,
maybe this is something that I can do when I get older. So that's where the whole PT thing started.
Do you walk in there and just be like, wow, this is cool? Or cool. So now in your bio, it says like, you know, you got into the PT world and then you were kind of disappointed with what was happening in that. Can you speak a little bit to like why that was? What were you seeing that you're like, this isn't right?
So I started going to physical therapy for that injury in 1988.
Okay.
Graduated from PT school in 2000. And my first job just happened to be at the clinic that I was a patient at.
Okay.
And going in, basically everything was the same as it was in 1988. And I was like, I can't see myself doing this for, you know, 12, 15 years, whatever. There's got to be a better way to do this. And that's when I started to try to look for something else. I was like, there's got to be more than what I know now. There's got to be something else out there. Mm-hmm. So I was pretty frustrated within the first year of getting out of PT school. And that's when I started to try to figure out different ways to do things.
Like when you say you're frustrated, I guess what were you specifically frustrated about? Just not getting results with people, or was it something bigger than that?
So I was getting results, typical PT results, meaning people felt better, had better range of motion for a while. But then the real frustration was when I would run into those people, you know, 2 or 3 months after I discharged them, I'd run into them in the grocery store or something and be like, hey, how's the shoulder doing? And they'd say something like, well, it's, you know, it never really got all the way better. Or now I'm seeing a different physical therapist, or now I'm seeing a chiropractor and I'm seeing a massage therapist. So I was like, so I get that I'm making people feel better and I'm getting short-term, you know, increases in range of motion and things like that. But am I really getting down to what the root cause of their problem is? Mm. And if I'm not, how can I figure out how to get there?
Yeah. So you're getting the short-term results, but you wanted the long-term.
Right.
So what was your first step? Like, so you have this problem. You're like, okay, something's not working here. You had your schooling, you know, as everybody else did. Where do you turn to try to figure that out?
So I just started going back through notes and textbooks, taking more continuing ed classes, just trying to figure out, is there something that I'm missing? And then what I figured out was I had a lot of knowledge, a lot of things that they taught us in PT school, but they didn't teach us how to apply the knowledge that we learned. So it wasn't that I didn't understand anatomy, physiology, biomechanics. It was just that I was being blinded by somebody coming in with a symptom and thinking it's my job to treat that symptom. So the problem with physical therapy is patients come in and they think they're coming to see us because they have pain or tightness or swelling. Sure. And then we think we have to relieve them of those symptoms. That's not why I'm a physical therapist. So the real frustration was I sat back and looked at the things that I was doing and I was like, you know, I could have done this when I was in high school. I didn't have to go through 7 years of college to do these things that make no sense. So that's when I started diving down deeper and getting to, okay, so where does the physiology fit with what's going on with this?
Yeah. So you were seeing that typical PT was kind of dictated by the patient coming in. Hey, this is what I want fixed. This is what hurts. Where now you're thinking, okay, well, taking that one step further, why does it hurt? Or why did they get into this situation in the first place? That kind of.
Right. On the physiological level. So
sure.
We tend to say, you know, that muscle got tight, that muscle got angry, you know, putting a label on something. your muscle doesn't have its own brain. So it doesn't decide to get tight. There's some kind of physiological something that happens to make it get tight. So, so that's where I got into, so how do I take this physiology apart and then put it back together?
Yeah. Interesting. So this, we're going to go down a rabbit hole of physiology here. So buckle up. But is there like a common I can't even say the word now, now that we're recording live here, but is there a common, like, my muscle is tight. Does it the same cause every time for my muscle tightness? And if so, what is that on a physiology level?
So there's different things that can make your muscle tight. There's different reason why the muscle gets tight, but the physiology of what is actually happening is the same. So when we say a muscle is tight, that actually means that a muscle is inhibited. So your muscles are your muscle contraction is regulated by your nervous system. So if the nervous system is no longer regulating that contraction normally, your muscle, if it's in a short position, has no choice to get stuck being short. Okay. So that's why you feel tight. And then you get up and start moving around like, man, I'm really tight. Well, it's because that muscle is not getting normal getting correct information from your nervous system to say either contract more or contract less.
Okay. So would that be like, I would imagine the way you described that, like I actually just did a workout like an hour ago and I'm sitting on physio ball because I don't want to be sitting in my chair getting tight. But if I'd sit in my chair and stand up, I would feel kind of, I don't know if it's, pain or heat or hotness, tinginess in my hamstrings because, they'd been sitting for a while. I would consider that tight. Now there's another level of tightness that at me as a runner is like chronic tightness where, I didn't stretch for years and years or whatever, didn't pay attention to mobility at all. And I can barely touch my knees, when I bend over. Is that like the same type or is those two different things?
So let's go with the runner part that you talked about there. So runners get tight. So runners always complain about, chronic tight hamstrings, that kind of thing. So the reason why is because if you don't use full range of motion and don't make your muscles lengthen all the way and shorten all the way on a regular basis, then you start to lose that motion. And if you don't move in different planes, you start to lose those planes. Yeah. So predominantly when I see runners or cyclists, they are predominantly a single plane athlete. There's not a lot of transverse plane twisting stuff. Sure. So when I work with them and we talk about, how do I warm up? How do I cool down? Mm-hmm. We always have to make them over-exaggerate their motion because they're using a shortened range of motion. Okay. So if you only use that shortened range, that's all your body thinks it has to do. So you start to lose those end ranges of motion. So when we train with them and we warm them up and cool them down, we need to go through full range of motion and add transverse plane motion to that because what I talk about when I teach is what's called the recipe for injury. And one of the key ingredients to the recipe for injury is lack of transverse plane motion. So injuries happen because you lack control or transverse plane motion.
Okay.
So the transverse plane is twisting, so turning.
Yep.
So you have frontal, you have sagittal, you have transverse. So transverse plane motion, if you look at like an anatomical chart, muscles rarely ever just run in one plane. They're always going in some type of diagonal pattern, which means that muscle has to function in the transverse plane and help stabilize the transverse plane when you're doing whatever it is you do for your sports or your activities.
Okay. So then when I'm like tight after a workout, it's not the, that I didn't have that range of motion in my workout necessarily. If I'm just like sore and tightness, I think sometimes are synonyms for athletes because it's hard to say like, is it tight or is it sore? Would that be something different physiology then?
So when like talking soreness versus tightness, I would equate soreness with after workouts. whereas tightness could be pre-workout.
Got it.
But it's still the same. So it's still inhibition. So neuromuscular inhibition is what causes the tightness. So the muscles get stuck. So you get it, what happens when you train, you're using those muscles. Mm-hmm. So once those muscles once you've worked them out, they're going to be fatigued. And one of the things that happens there is neuromuscular inhibition. So that's why we want to cool down after we work out so we can reset that. So we're not stuck in inhibition. And then we sit down on the couch and we get even tighter than we were before.
Yeah. Okay. So how would you, you do a running workout. Do all you need to do to cool down is run some more or?
Nope. So the running is once again predominantly single plane.
Yeah.
Okay. So with runners, what I'll do is have them do kind of it's like a karaoke, but just walking. So crossover footwork.
Yeah.
And then squatting all the way down. Okay. So when they run, your pelvis and your hips and your lumbar spine don't do a lot of twisting and turning. Mm-hmm. So when we cool down, we want to do a whole bunch of twisting and turning so we maintain that motion.
Sure.
So the way you increase your motion and increase your strength at the same time is to train through a full range of motion. So that's why when we warm up and cool down, you always want to over-exaggerate the motion that you're going through.
Got it. This is probably the reason I can't dance. I can't move my hips any way except forward. okay. So what about an athlete, not running, but that they go through, you know, maybe wrestling, they have really wide range of movement. Is there a particular way like that you would cool them down differently? Or is that something that a cool down should be pretty much the same for every athlete?
So your general ranges of motion, your general cool down is going to have the same components across the spectrum.
Okay.
But if you've got, so if I'm dealing with like a gymnast or something like that, they've got an over-exaggerated motion to begin with. Okay. So we have to over-exaggerate their stuff versus if I was working with a football player who's an offensive lineman. Mm-hmm. So some of that stuff is going to be different, but the actual thought process behind warm up and cool down is the same.
Okay.
So when we talk about those, what you need to do, there's key ingredients. Like you need to have transverse plane. You need to be loaded. So we don't do a lot of warm up and cool down laying down because you're only using a fraction of the muscles then. So if you're standing up, you're getting co-contraction on all sides of the joint from the muscle. Whereas if you lay down and you don't have compression through the joint, now that's not going to carry over to using as many muscles as you possibly can, which is what you want to do with your warm up and your cool down.
Okay, cool. That's a good way to put it. Use as many muscles as you can.
Right. Yep. So one of the old school, the whole stretching thing, people would try to stretch one muscle at a time. Well, it takes you a long time to warm up that way. Yeah. And not only does it take a long time, but it's also decreasing your strength and actually increasing your risk of injury and not decreasing it. So that's why we don't want to do passive stretching type things.
Is that the same for after?
Correct.
Okay. Yep. So basically passive stretching is never a good is never a good option.
Yep. Yep.
Why?
So first let's define stretching because everybody kind of like has their own little thing. Okay. So stretching defined is passively lengthening a muscle for a certain amount of time.
Okay.
So bending over, hanging, touching your toes for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Pulling your foot to your butt for a quad stretch for 15 seconds. That's passive lengthening of the muscle. So that's stretching. So active warm-up, dynamic warm-up is moving. So it's actually moving actively dynamically. Mm-hmm. So there's two different things. So the problem with stretching is, and I'll kind of role play with you. This is what I go through. If I have a patient come in that's a dancer or a gymnast and they are not going to give up stretching.
Yeah.
So what I do is I ask them, okay, so why do you want to stretch? And they'll say, well, because I want to increase my motion and decrease the muscles being tight. And I'll say, okay, so tell me what a muscle is. Give me a quick and easy definition of what a muscle is. And they'll usually come up with something, well, it contracts or it shortens and it lengthens. And I'll say, okay, would you agree with me that a muscle is a contractile tissue? And they'll say, yeah. So I'll say, okay, so of all the tissues in your body, Muscle is the only one that contracts. So when it contracts, it's going to do one of two things. It's either going to stabilize your joint or it's going to move your joint. And they'll say, okay, makes all that makes sense. And I'll say, okay, so why would you want your muscle to relax? And they'll say, well, because it feels good or because of more range of motion. Yeah. But then I'll say, so wait a second, your muscle is a contractile tissue. It only has one job.
Yeah.
And it's the only thing in your body that does that job. If you take away your muscle's ability to contract, now you can't move your joint safely and you can't stabilize your joint safely. You decrease the force output, so you decrease your stability. So what we want to do is we want your muscles to contract and go through a full range of motion.
Sure.
So we don't ever want muscles to relax. So usually what's going on, if you have a muscle that's tight, usually on the opposite side, you have a muscle that is not firing normally. So there's no response through your nervous system to tell them to work with each other. So that's
okay.
called the law of reciprocal inhibition. So okay. when your quads contract to straighten your knee, they send a reciprocal response through your spinal cord to your hamstrings that say contract less.
Got
so
it.
As long as you get give and take on both sides, then you're safe.
Okay.
As soon as you shut one side off by doing something like stretching, now that side is dysfunctional and the other side gets tighter because now the reciprocal response is off.
Got it.
So what we want to do is increase your range of motion
yeah.
by increasing your strength.
Okay.
So that's when we teach those gymnasts and dancers, okay, instead of doing this to increase your range of motion stretching, I want you to do this exercise, which will increase your range of motion by increasing your strength.
Okay. And what would be an example of an exercise to increase range of motion?
So that a basic easy one would be like if somebody comes in, they complain of hamstring tightness when they bend sure. over and touch their toes.
Yeah.
So if we use the law of reciprocal inhibition as our guide, we would say, okay, so there must be some muscle on the opposite side that's not pulling forward to pull them forward. So if we test abdominals, we can check that, see that abdominals aren't firing. If we get the abdominals to fire and pull them forward, now that pulls them forward, sends a reciprocal response to the hamstrings to say contract less. Now they can go all the way forward, touch their hamstrings, and they have no touch their toes, and they have no hamstring tightness.
Interesting. And can you do like, I asked this because I think I know the answer, but is there something that you can do to have like basically immediate results with that?
Yes. Yep. So I'll test them in the clinic. Yeah. So I'll test, okay, here's your toe touch. It feels tight. You can't touch your toes.
Yeah.
I'm going to test the strength of your abs. Your abs are not firing. I'm going to reverse the inhibition that you're experiencing in your abs. And then you're going to bend over and touch your toes. And now you can touch your toes without any hamstring tightness. And then the great part about that is I can say, okay, so that muscle that I was just turning back on for you, here's an isometric that you can do at home. So you can do these exercises and these active warm up and cool down activities to make those muscles fire normally. And then you don't have any more tightness.
Oh, okay. So the goal is to get your muscles all the way around your body firing correctly from, you know, basically the brain muscle connection there. And then if that all happens, you should have normal range of motion.
Correct. So that's why we do all of our active and dynamic warm-up. It's never muscle specific or it's never joint specific because your body has to work with each other. Your shoulder has to work with your hip. So if we break that down like an old school warm-up stuff, it would take forever.
Yeah.
So now if we learn how to warm up total body altogether, we can do a whole bunch of things with a whole bunch of muscles and actually teach them how to work with each other. So when you go play your sport, now you've already got normal proprioceptive input and you're avoiding injury.
Awesome. Cool. Well, that was a rabbit trail I wasn't expecting to go down, but that was very helpful. So what I want to talk about today, or at least had planned to talk about today, was what's the like physiology of certain tools that are common to use when recovering, you know, like Normatec boots, massage guns, you know, foam roller, the stick, that kind of stuff. So we'll take them one at a time. And we already had, you know, kind of a physiology lesson, but we're going to keep going here. So why don't we start with the Normatec boots? Cause I know it's everybody's favorite. It's also one of the most expensive ones. So let's first talk about, like, what is the purpose? What is it trying to accomplish? Is it accomplishing that? And then we'll get into maybe, are there some other things that we could do to replace it and accomplish the same thing?
Okay.
So first of all, yeah, what are they supposed to do? Normatec boots.
So it's basically a pneumatic pumping to get fluid to pump through the system to help you with cool down. And this is more, so this would fall in the passive category. So you're sitting there and the boots are squeezing and moving, moving the lymph or blood around. So the Normatec things, if you've got the money and you've got the time to do that, there's definitely nothing that's going to cause things to go backwards. So there's no negative results from Normatec boots. Yeah. So I would think that, and people that I've talked to that use them, they swear by them. And I was like, you know, if that's, you've got the money, you've got the time, go ahead and do that. But there's much easier, cheaper, more effective way. So I would like to be on the active side of recovery versus passive.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So what are they trying to do? I mean, from a physiology level, what does the pumping compression do for recovery?
So it's basically just compression. So it'd be the same thing as if you have a swollen, if you roll your ankle and it swells up, you elevate it, you compress it. It's just more of a pneumatic system where it's pushing it's changing the compression to help push the flow.
So working with the lymphatic system essentially to get rid of the waste. And we've been talking about the lymphatic system in the last couple episodes with Gary Reinel, Kelly Starrett, and now it's coming up again. So you'll have to go back and listen to those if you're not really understanding what the lymphatic system is. So what is, like, something you said you would rather be in the active side of that? How could you replicate what the Normatec boots are doing without the Normatec boots?
Okay. So you can get increased blood flow, increased blood pump by doing exercise.
Okay.
So either going through a cool down program that is, once again, getting you through end range of motion, transverse plane, weight bearing, all those kinds of things. So that's going to help out. You could do something as easy as riding a bike. So anytime your muscles, you're getting blood flow going, you're using the muscles, that's going to help you recover. And what I'm with my population, I'm most concerned about maintaining as much range of motion as we can possibly maintain and maintain strength.
Yeah.
So that's why I always default to active dynamic warm-up, because A, it's free. B, you don't really need any equipment. Yeah. What equipment you do need is pretty cheap. And you can do it whenever. So if I've got somebody who's already got an injury, I can give them active dynamic warm-up for their sport or their activity, but they can also do those throughout the day.
Yeah.
So they keep things turned on, they maintain their motion, they maintain their strength.
Okay. Okay. So basically, I'm going to sum this up before we move on to the next one. What I'm hearing you say is essentially you can activate the muscles yourself. That's going to activate the lymphatic system, clear the waste out, but you're also, doing that range of motion part of it as well. If you're doing the active warm up or cool down rather than the Normatec boot. So probably harder to watch Netflix on your couch with an active warm up and cool down, but you get what you pay for. So massage guns or a specialized massage from a masseuse. Is there a difference between a massage from a professional or a home, handheld gun, whether it be a Viper or Hypervolt or whatever? There seems like there's 10,000 of them now. So. Right.
Yeah. So this is another one that I'll go back to the patient and be like, okay, so why do you want to get a massage? Well, it feels good. It gets the muscle to stop being tight. So then I go into, so the reason why your muscle is tight is because of physiology. So if you make that muscle relax without figuring out why that muscle was tight in the first place, you're opening yourself to more problems. Okay. So take the tight hamstring person. So
yeah,
people that complain of chronically tight hamstrings, well, I stretch my hamstrings, I do the hypervolt, I do the foam rolling, and I feel like I'm getting worse. So I think you even had one of your, her name was Sonia, was on one of your earlier podcasts and said, you know, I really like the Normatec boots. And I started to notice after I did some of those passive things like the massage and the rolling that I didn't feel like that was helping me, or I felt worse. Mm-hmm. So the reason why people do that is to again, get rid of the muscle spasm. So what you need to remember is that muscle spasm is a physiological response to something that's going on.
Yeah.
So as a doctor of physical therapy, it's my job to figure out what is causing that spasm to go on. So if I can get rid of the spasm and never have to touch that muscle, that means the problem was somewhere else. So kind of back to the toe touch, abs not working, making your hamstrings tight, can't do the toe touch. So the root cause of the problem was not the hamstrings. So if we keep on blaming the hamstrings, we're never going to get down to what the actual problem was. So the problem was in that first example was inhibition of the abs.
Yeah.
So if we reverse that, now we don't have tight hamstrings anymore. And we have normal strength and we have normal motion. So back to your question about the gun versus the massage, you're going to get the same thing because the purpose of both of those is to decrease the muscle spasm.
Sure.
What I'm saying is the important thing to realize is that muscle spasm is not there just because that muscle woke up one day and said, hey, I'm going to be in spasm.
Yeah.
There had to be something happen to cause that to happen.
Yeah. Okay. So go ahead.
So, what we did was we've done pilot studies that I've posted on Instagram and I think on YouTube. So we took a Theragun, for example. Mm-hmm. So we took the Theragun, we measured seated toe touch with a subject and then did Theragun on the hamstrings for a minute. So his toe touch increased by 2 inches.
Okay.
And before we also tested his force output with a dynamometer. So his toe touch increased by 2 inches, but his force output on the dynamometer went down by 18%.
Force output from the hamstring?
Hamstrings, yep.
Okay.
Which makes total sense because why are you doing it? You're trying to decrease muscle spasm and increase range of motion. So if that's all you want to do, then the Theragun is a great thing to do. But the problem is we decreased his strength.
Yeah.
So now do we want to go run after we do that? Or people will say, well, I won't do it before, but then I should do it after, right? And my response is, well, physiology doesn't change before and after exercise. It's the same.
Yeah.
So if you do it after exercise, you're still causing more inhibition, which makes your recovery longer.
Okay. So did you test that then against something else? Like, did you do, you know, the Theragun on the hamstrings and then do the force output and then test it versus, I believe your system's called the 180 system. So like, did you do the 180 system with the same person? And what were the results there?
Yep. So we've done pre and post test with muscles that are inhibited mostly lower extremity stuff, but so we can increase, and it depends on how much inhibition you have when you come in. So, you know, we can double your force output using the 180 system within 10 seconds. So we can test your quads, see that they're inhibited, and then retest and double your force output in 10 to 15 seconds, which also increases your range of motion.
Yeah. So if you increase your force output and your quads, then your hamstrings get more flexible, correct?
Yeah. So they can lengthen longer. Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Interesting. Cool. Okay. So essentially the massage guns and massages, like they work to relax the muscle, increase range of motion, but at the end of the day, they're giving you, you know, more essentially damage to the muscle, increasing recovery time from that, which is obviously not what this podcast is about. I'm going to have to take another look at my massage gun because it calls me at night. It's like, oh, it feels so good. Okay. So what about like then a foam roller or a stick? It's not the percussive, more of the I don't know if you want to call it deeper or, you know, less forceful type of, you know, massage, but it's still, I would say probably still similar to massage, but does the massage roller fall in the same category as the massage gun?
Yep. So actually the rolling and stretching on the pilot studies that we did with those actually decreased strength by about 22%. So even more so than the massage gun. So once again, you're trying to get muscle spasm to go down when you do that by massaging it, trying to get the muscles to relax.
Sure.
That's exactly what happens. They relax, which is more technically that's inhibition. So once you have inhibition, force put output goes down, single leg stand stability goes down. So a lot of the things that I was looking at when I was frustrated with PT back in the beginning, there was this explosion around the 2000 era where there was a ton of studies about stretching and how that decreased force output, decreased single leg stance, increased injury, that kind of stuff. So that's where I started getting into, okay, so where does this physiology fit with injuries and recovery and all that, on all those things. So the actual looking at stretching is what kind of got my ball rolling to begin with.
Okay. So what about like when you're using the foam roller in a different way, like some people would consider it like soft tissue work where you're contracting through, you know, maybe one, it's in one spot on your, you know, thigh or calf or something, and then you're going through, you know, a range of motion with your leg to get that contraction. Is that going to be first of all, are you following what I'm trying to say here?
I think I get what you're saying. Okay. So you're basically keeping the foam roller in one place and you're trying to contract the muscle.
Yeah.
Okay. I've never heard of that or seen that. That might be that, you know, that might work without causing inhibition. It's so, yeah, that would be a good thing to look at that I've never never thought of.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I gave you homework.
Okay.
Okay. So, and then I'm assuming the alternatives to, you know, massage and that kind of stuff would just be also the same, more of the active, you know, active recovery, active warm up type of exercises. So, why don't we go into explaining like what the 180 system is? We've kind of touched on it, and I'm sure you've explained parts of it, but just like from beginning to end, how would you tell somebody who's not a PT what is the 180 system? And is there a way that they can try to implement some of it from home before they come in and see somebody like you?
Sure. So the 180 system, in a nutshell, is basically an evaluation tool and a treatment tool together. So one of the disconnects that I saw in physical therapy is we went from trying to find a diagnosis and doing all these tests and looking at all these things and then falling back into protocol type thinking.
Sure.
So when I put this together, what I wanted it first, I wanted it to be based on science and function. So we start every visit with a functional screen. So it doesn't matter what you're coming in for. You could be coming in for shoulder impingement. I'm still going to have to take off your shoes. I'm going to watch you walk, squat, single leg squat. So we go through this battery of tests for our functional screen, just so we can see what you can and can't do and let you explain to me what you're feeling when you're going through those positions. So that takes about a minute, maybe a minute and a half. Then I take what I think I saw. So another disconnect with PT is we tend to think that we can watch somebody move and say, oh, well, that's the muscle, that's the problem. So if your hip moves out, well, that means you have a weak gluteus medius. So how do we know that unless we actually test those things? So what we do next is we put you on the table and we start testing individual muscles to see if they can fire on demand. So we're putting those muscles in basically like a mid-range motion to see if they can stop me from moving you.
Yeah.
If you can't stop me from moving you, or if you get pain, that means that muscle is inhibited and we need to reverse the inhibition. So we go to the muscle belly, which is where your neuromuscular junctions are, irritate that junction to get the muscle to turn back on. And then once we do that, then we kind of keep moving through and looking for other muscles that are inhibited.
Okay.
So once we get everything,
irritate the muscle, what are you talking about there?
So basically we're using a manual therapy technique to that muscle belly. So you're basically getting the nerve and the muscle to work with each other.
Okay. How would that look? Like I can't picture, you know, somebody saying, "Hey, work."
Yeah. So it's like I said, it's a manual therapy technique where I'm just using my hand to facilitate that contraction.
Sure. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
So then once we get through turning everything back on, now we get you back off the table and we redo the screen. So if you were somebody who on a single leg stance, your hip moved out and you're unstable in your foot and you're wobbly. Mm-hmm. Now, if I've got those muscles to contract normally the way they're supposed to, you should be able to do a single leg squat. So we'll go through, retest, make sure you can do all those things. Then another disconnect with PT was physical therapists don't do a good job of giving people exercise because we don't understand exercise and we really don't get exercise education while we're in PT school. So the good thing with the system is I'm basically making your exercises by watching what you can and can't do with your screen. So there's staple exercises that we give a lot of people. Okay. But then once I see what your unique faults or what you have a hard time with, then I can make exercises that target that specific movement pattern so you can take those home. So when you come back for your second, third, fourth visit, you should be better than you were before and be maintaining what we're doing as we're moving down. As we're going through the process. Whereas when I was doing old school physical therapy, it was always like, you feel better, you feel bad. We play catch up and we're just doing yo-yo back and forth the whole time. Whereas now it should feel like you're moving through the spectrum and you're getting better every single time you do your exercises.
Sure. So it's, I just had a thought pop in my head where like this turning on of the muscle. Are you familiar with like electrical nervous muscle stimulator, ENMS or EMS or something, like a Mark Pro or something like that? Would that like, could somebody use that to help facilitate that, you know, brain muscle connection?
Yep. So eSTEM, which is what you're talking about, there's different parameters and settings and all that stuff. But you can use eSTEM to help facilitate contractions.
Sure.
But I'm not going to send somebody home with an eSTEM machine. I can send them home with exercises.
Yep.
Also, the other problem is, fortunately, before I got out of PT school, we looked at the research on eSTEM and specifically for ACL reconstruction rehab. So a lot of people will use eSTEM on the quads to help get the quads to turn on, so it's easier to get their quads to facilitate after having their ACL reconstructed.
Okay.
What those studies showed was if you're using some type of external output to facilitate the contraction, your body will now depend on that external output rather than your internal input. So what I want to do is give them internal stimulation, so the things that they can do inside, so I can go directly to the muscle and say, okay, there, now you do these exercises to maintain that and keep moving forward versus doing eSTEM. Plus, I had a discussion with somebody who is actually doing eSTEM they were doing dry needling and adding the electrical stimulation to the needling to say, okay, well, this can facilitate a contraction. I said, okay, I think it can. But by the time you get done setting that up, I'm already done treating my patient and I don't need to do any of that stuff.
Okay. Cool. So what, is there like, if we can just kind of walk through the body, real quick of like, what are the antagonist muscles? So of common like tightness areas or stuff. So, like I know, but both upper back and lower back is a big deal for tightness or pain and stuff. So if somebody was having pain or tightness up near the shoulder blade on your back, what would you look to as probably the most common or, you know, kind of the other muscles that you would look to as not being able to fire correctly?
So upper back, so if you were thinking direct oppositional muscle, so if you were thinking upper, like middle and lower trap, something like that, you would be thinking like pec major on the opposite side. Okay. So a lot of people so a lot of my patients go see physical therapy, doesn't work out, whatever, they come see me as, you know, I've already tried this, I'll try you because I heard you're different. Yeah. So I'll ask them what they're doing. So if we've got somebody who's been told they have tight pecs, so they've been told that they sit with their shoulders rounded forward and their pecs are tight, that they need to go into a doorway and stretch or go into a corner and stretch. What I would say is, okay, let's not do that. Let's see if your middle, lower trap, upper trap, rhomboids, lat, let's see if those are actually facilitated. If they're not, then what we should be doing is working on contracting those muscles that are posterior. So they're pulling you back. And once those contract, they should be sending that reciprocal inhibition response to the pecs, so they're not so tight. So that's a long-term solution for the problem, because you're actually getting to the root cause of the problem. Mm-hmm. So when I have people come in and they say, well, I have to do this stretch every single day, what I'll say is you shouldn't have to do anything every single day, especially if you're getting tight. If you're getting tighter and you're getting tighter, then you're doing the wrong thing.
Yeah. Well, that's like music to my ears, because I hate stretching.
Yeah.
This is the single best podcast interview, because you've given me permission not to stretch. So then the opposite would be true if your back is tight, or like if you have kind of a knot. I mean, you hear like massage therapists talk about knots in your back and muscles and stuff. What is a knot?
Yeah. So you can get a knot, like you can actually like feel like tightness in the muscle, like there's a knot there. So that is those actinomyosin cross bridges crossing over, getting stuck and making a knot, because once again, there's no regulation from the nervous system.
Okay.
So if that nerve can't say contract more, contract less, the only thing that muscle can do is get, once it gets in that short position, is it gets stuck in that short position.
Okay. So a knot a knot is a contraction that's not releasing, essentially.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyways, so finish what you were going to say.
And then I think, so knots, that's what the knot is. Charlie horse, same thing. The muscle, you just over contract and it gets stuck.
So we're talking about like a knot in the back,
right?
Would that be the pec then, that you would need to,
and that could fire. Be, so you can have, or it could be like when you do resistance training, you could be sore the next day. Cause what are you doing? You're causing damage to the muscle because you're trying to get it to heal back normal, or get it to heal back, so it's bigger, stronger, that kind of stuff. So I'm not saying that soreness is bad. Like if you're working out and you're doing resistance training, you should have soreness.
Yeah.
But the way you get out of that soreness is to exercise through a full range of motion to get that going again.
Sure. Okay. What about patellar tendonitis? Now I know you've done a video of this on your Instagram, so anybody can go follow you at the 180 system, and one is spelled O-N-E and then 80 system. Talk to us about like what would be the cause of patellar tendonitis, because in the video you say, you know, it's not the tendon's fault. It doesn't think, essentially. Right. It's something else. So what is that something else?
So tendonitis is too much, that tendon has too much pressure on it, so it's becoming irritated because it's being overused.
Yeah.
So usually if you have a patellar tendonitis, or if you got somebody with Osgood-Slaughter disease, that type of thing, that's telling you that it's being overused. So targeting that tendon is not going to solve your problem, because just like you said, your tendon doesn't wake up one day and say, I'm going to be angry. So that's a response to somebody else not doing their job.
Okay.
So if you think of, okay, the muscle, that tendon is pulling too hard, it's coming from the quads. So why are the quads working so hard and putting so much stress on that tendon? It's because somebody somewhere else is not doing their job. So when we watch people go through the screen, if we watch them squat and they start shifting over in their squat because they've got knee pain and they can't stabilize in a single leg squat, then we can say, okay, there's something going on here. Is it the hamstrings? Is it the glutes? And then that's where we can go through and start taking things apart. So people that get frustrated, like I see PTs post all the time with, you know, what's the best way to treat tendonitis? Well, the best way to treat tendonitis is ignore the tendon and go figure out what muscle is not working.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're kind of like, there's the antagonist and the protagonist muscle. And it seems to be kind of flip-flopping from anterior or posterior or the front of you or the back of you. You know, so if the pain or the tightness is on the front side of your body, it's probably a culprit in the backside. Is that safe to say?
Yeah. Usually that'll happen. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Cool. And then like in this situation with patellar tendonitis that we were just talking about, the hamstring, if it's not firing correctly, like when your quad contracts, your hamstring is still working. It's just controlling the contraction essentially of the quad, or, you know, am I saying that right? And then if it's not working right, like the quad just contracts too much.
Correct.
Okay.
Because if there's no regulation, then the only thing you can do is contract.
Sure.
So what you want to have happen is when one muscle contracts, it's saying contract, contract, contract. And that muscle is telling that it's going through the spinal cord to the opposite side. So now this muscle can say, okay, that muscle is shortening this fast. I can lengthen that fast. The problem is when this one tries to contract and it can't because this one tries to relax and lengthen, but it can't because this one is stuck contracted. So you just want to think there, you want equal give and take on both sides of the joint and around all sides of the joint. So the major problem with patellar tendonitis is lack of control with pronation. So when I see somebody who can't control pronation, automatically in my head, I go through all the muscles that should be lengthening during pronation. So if they're not lengthening, then there's too much pressure put on that tendon, and that's why the irritation is happening.
Got it. Yeah. So yeah, that's an interesting, and I'm hoping we're repeating a lot of the same things here, but I'm hoping the listeners kind of like understanding, you know, what we're saying, because the normal person would say, okay, the muscles that are contracting would be the ones that are stabilizing that joint. But essentially what we're saying is there still has to be muscles that are extending in the right way to stabilize the muscles that are contracting.
Correct. Because if you look at it, so notice that I said one muscle contracts, the other muscle contracts less. So it's not that the other muscle relaxes.
Yeah.
So people will say, well, that your muscle has to relax because that's how the joint can move. And I'll say, no, you've got one side that's contracting concentrically and the other side that's contracting eccentrically. So that's how you have normal joint kinematics. So if I go to bend my elbow and my bicep contracts and my tricep totally relaxes, now my joint is not going to glide the way it should, because I've got total contraction on one side with nothing stabilizing it on the other side. So that's why you have to have give and take on both sides. So it's an eccentric contraction on one side, concentric contraction on the other side.
Yeah, but they're both contractions,
right?
Not relaxing.
Right.
Cool. Yep. Okay. So we're coming close to the end of our time here, but there are a few questions I have from the audience. I mail out or email out or at post on social, like, here, I'm going to interview, you know, Dr. Polka, what questions do you have for him? So I have a few questions, and they are meant to be answered in, you know, 60 seconds or less. So we actually already talked about one, patellar tendonitis, because I wanted to talk about that before, because I didn't know if we're going to be able to answer that in 60 seconds. The other question was blood, like, and I'm just going to read it how it was written. And then I think we'll probably understand what they're talking about. So blood pressure cuffs, are they useful during training? You know, like the blood flow restriction, I think, is what they're really looking at there.
Yeah, that's one of the things. So in our clinic, we basically have a treatment table and weights and balls and that kind of stuff. So we don't have normal PT electrical stimulation and cups and needles and all that. But the one thing we do have is blood flow restriction cuffs, which I'm a huge fan of BFR, especially with lower extremity patients who are post-op. So anytime we have some kind of weight bearing constriction or we're not allowed to go full weight bearing, I love using BFR with those people. They do fantastic with it. So that is, I would, if you have not looked into BFR as a physical therapist, I would definitely get on that. And the one guy that I follow the most, who's the most in depth in his research, is the HPM. So THEHPM on Instagram. And he's got a course that is phenomenal. I mean, he goes through everything from rehabbing injuries with it to actually sports performance with BFR to how you can use it with elderly people. So I highly recommend BFR.
Awesome. So you see the benefit in rehab as well as like just in your normal training.
Yes.
And both strength and endurance, or just strength?
Yeah. When I first started using it, I was just basically using it for strength. But after going through the course and looking at the research there, there's a lot of stuff out there for endurance athletes too.
Cool. All right. Well, we're at the end of our time here. So where people can find you, if you need more Rhett Polka in your life, you can go to 180pt.com. ONE80PT.com, or follow him on the 180 system. Again, THEONE80 system. On Instagram. Is there anywhere else you want people to find you, Rhett?
The most informative information that I have out there for professionals, whether you're a strength coach, a PT, chiropractor, whatever, would be the Instagram account. Okay. If you're more of a patient, then it would be more the Facebook account, which is, I believe Facebook is 180 Physical Therapy.
Okay.
So it's just ONE80 Physical Therapy.
And I'll find that and get that linked in the show notes too. So if you're, not at a point where you can go there right now, you can check in the notes and they'll be there. So, anything else that you would want a athlete or a coach or a physical therapist to know about, the 180 system or healing or training before we go?
I would just encourage anybody who's a professional out there to first take apart your thinking before you start prescribing and diagnosing and all that stuff. I think that social media is a good tool to a point, but anytime you see something out there, always think about, okay, what is the physiological effect of this? Is this just a symptom modification for short term, or am I actually helping this person for the long term by looking at this through scientific lenses?
Yeah. Awesome. And you as an athlete, as well, if you're not, even if you're not in the PT, or scientific world, you as an athlete should have some sort of critical thought when it comes to new tools and stuff, because they're always going to be bombarded on social with the latest tool to make you run faster, jump higher, and that kind of stuff. So just use some critical thought there. So thanks so much, Rhett, for being a part of the Science of Sports Recovery community. And I can't wait to see what you guys do in the future.
All right. Well, thanks for having me on.
All right. Episode's over. If you found value in this episode, please consider giving us a review on iTunes. And if you haven't already yet subscribed, do so now so you don't miss any important topics in the coming week. And if you have any questions or suggestions for the show, please send them my way. I am most responsive on Instagram. That's at jcheese, J-A-E, cheese, like the food, or email me directly at jase, J-A-S-E, at scienceofsportsrecovery.com. Talk soon.